August blends and quiet.
Methodist.
Queen
works
on occasion.
Well, let's cut the bull.
Thanks for tuning in to Rebellion Radio, the Hunger Games podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rebellion Radio, episode number 35. I am your host, Hurley Commons.
I'm Alex Bolova.
And I'm April Crisanti.
Welcome back, everybody, to our August episode. We are trying to follow our monthly schedule. And yes, we are in the final weeks of summer, sadly, with schools. I have school starting next week. That's
same.
Scary.
Me too.
Where's the time gone?
Oh.
Senior year.
Yes.
Senior year. Are we all gonna be seniors?
Sure.
Wait, Alex. Who's? I forget our ages. Who's younger?
Alex is the youngest.
I'm going to be a junior.
And Elena's going to college.
Elena's going.
Yes.
That's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Me and you are in the middle.
Unfortunately, Elena can't be with us because she lost her mic.
Yes.
Oops.
We all are professionals here, but.
Yes, so if you would like, you can go to our Kickstarter page and get us a new microphone. That is a joke. We don't give us money.
Well, we should consider that.
We should consider getting money.
So our first segment is breaking news, where we update you on the latest and greatest Hunger Games news stories. April, first story, please.
All right. Well, this article discusses the changes. Well, the three major changes, not major, big changes between the book and the film. One of them is PETA is not paralyzed at the start of the 75th Hunger Games, and. From Francis Lawrence, he says, we manned him up a little. He says, the story doesn't really change, and his relationship with Katniss doesn't change. It's just he's a different kind of character. And the second one is Bonnie and Twill, which we already knew, are gone. They're gone. We've known that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided to get rid of them and figure out a new way to introduce District 13. And the last one is the removal of the character Darius, who intervenes during Gale's whipping, and there's nothing saying why they did this, but or how the scene happens, but
I don't think any of this is really too detrimental, except for the fact that Bonnie and Twill aren't going to be in this. We already knew that, but still, it does make you wonder how they are going to introduce District 13 into all of this.
Right. Well, and also it's interesting the first one. How PETA is... I love this quote, though, because it doesn't really, like... So Francis Lawrence basically says, the story doesn't really change. The relationship with Katniss doesn't change. He's just a different kind of character. Like, what does that mean? I don't understand that.
That's a very weird sentence, yeah.
It's like, we didn't change anything big. He's just a different person.
He just has a leg.
I don't know. I mean, like, it depends on how they pull it off. If it's like, he's a little more mature... That's fine, but, you know, manning him up, that could mean, like, a lot of different things.
Yeah, so, like, he's going to walk on screen the very first scene. He's going to be like, PETA! Katniss, how are you? It's good to see you.
He's completely macho now.
I mean, the thing is, I talked to my friends about the Hunger Games, and one of the complaints they have is that PETA is kind of soft. He doesn't really, you know, stand up for himself. And so this actually could be very good for the film if he is a bit more sure. It is in his character to not be as strong as Katniss, but at the same time, and think of it in terms of cinematically, it probably would work better just in terms of people that haven't read the books. Like, if you see Katniss in The Hunger Games, the first movie, you know, people who haven't read the book, they say, oh, she's emotionless, when really, you know, if you read the book, you see it's her character. But with PETA, you know, if he comes off as a, you know, a wuss, the audience is going to be like, oh, why is she going for PETA instead of Gale? But if you man him up a bit, I don't know, get him to be more likable.
Yeah, I guess. I think it's all going to come down to execution. We got to wait and see. So the next story is an announcement from the Catching Fire soundtrack, and that's sort of a misnomer. It's sort of the companion album, so none of it, hopefully, it's going to be in the film, just like the first one. But the first artist on this companion album is Coldplay, with their song, which is going to be titled Atlas. So
Hunger, Hunger, Hunger Games.
Yeah, so I thought this was amazing, because apparently Coldplay has never done an original song for a movie before. And, really? And they're huge. Like, this is a big deal, I think. I mean, the first one had huge names as well, but...
I mean, you had smaller big names. You had more independent, like Arcade Fire.
Right.
No, if you're in sort of the hipster sphere, like I am, obviously.
Okay.
That's a huge name, especially to be associated with, you know, sort of a mainstream movie. But with Coldplay, this is something that everybody knows. Everybody knows Viva La Vida.
Everybody. No, it's like international, just they're, you know,
exactly.
Superstars. So, I think this is huge.
And my question is, you know, with Skyfall, the song Skyfall by Adele, actually, you know, you heard on the radio, it's actually a pop hit. It won the Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, if you actually have, you know, a big band like Coldplay, are we actually going to be hearing Atlas on the radio?
I definitely could see that, because what we saw Taylor Swift's song, right? Did we not right. see
Safe and Sound
get some, you know, radio play?
Both songs
it got some,
did
but not as much play. As I thought it would.
Mm. I just think,
or maybe I just don't listen to the radio.
Maybe you listen to your hipster channels.
Well, she had two on the Hunger Games, right? Or am I thinking?
No, of... she did. She had one that she had one that was like in the credits, and then one that was just on the soundtrack.
Yeah. Well, they both got pretty decent radio play.
Yeah. So even if you're not, you know, a Coldplay fan, they're a great band, and they actually did post a picture of the lyrics, and you know, they look pretty good. So we'll. Wait to see what that song sounds like, but I'm pretty excited. So, Alex, what is the next news story?
The next news story is that the Catching Fire world premiere date... Let me say that again so it's more fluid. So the Catching Fire world premiere date has been set for November 11th in... Drumroll, please. London!
Wow.
Wow. Well,
yeah, okay. So the original Hunger Games was, you know, has world premiere in Los Angeles, and so... With it being in London, it seems like the filmmakers are going for a more international approach to the film.
Yeah.
Trying to get more of the outside market.
I guess. This really surprised me, actually, because London, like, the books aren't set. They're set in America. It's popular right. in America. Like, I understand that it had international success, but I don't know. Maybe it's a good move.
I mean, we'll be honest. We don't really know how big The Hunger Games is in England or other foreign countries. So if you are a British listener...
Yes.
Please tell us if it is such a huge deal, if it's like Harry Potter level, if it's a very small thing. Email us in. We want to know like why they would choose London for the world premiere.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if you're a British fan, let us know.
And also, the studio had to note that Catching Fire opens in theaters less than 100 days from now.
100 days, you guys. Less than that.
Start counting down.
Oh my goodness, it's amazing. The next and final news story is that a new issue of Capital Couture was issued and emailed out, and I got it. And it features Johanna Mason, played by Jenna Malone. And you get to see some of the costume work and the makeup stuff that they've done. And I thought it was great. And again, it all ties in with Lionsgate's amazing promotion material for these films. But, you know, you get an email from the Capitol. And that in itself is pretty awesome. But then the pictures you get and the extra, like just this extra media, is amazing. So do you guys like the costume you guys saw for Johanna?
It wasn't exactly what I pictured. I mean, with a lot of Catching Fire, wasn't really paying attention to the fashion. But it's very impressive. Her costume seems to be made of plywood.
Plywood. Is this your expert analysis?
Yes. Well, no, it's literally made out of, like, corkboard or something.
Oh, is it?
It seems to have, like, nails nailed together.
Oh, yeah,
that's the way
I
it's
see that.
Coming off.
Yeah, I see that. April,
so
what do you think?
I guess she's from the Wood District.
Yeah.
Interesting way of going about that.
It looks so weird. I don't know. The neckline is throwing me off.
Is that your official comment? It looks so weird.
Well, I mean, it looks like capital-esque, but it's just, like Alex said, it's made out of corkboard with, like, random... I don't even know how to...
I mean, it looks like it's diamonds inlaid in it.
I like her nail color. Maybe they'll have another nail polish for this.
And the eye makeup. The eye makeup is pretty extreme.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool, though.
Anyway, that does it for the news this week. If you have any thoughts on the news, please write in, and we might read your thoughts off on the show. So now we're going to move into mailbag, where we read off your very own listener emails and comments and that sort of thing. And we absolutely love this segment because we get to read off your guys' thoughts. So please email in comments at rebellionradiopodcast.com or go to rebellionradiopodcast.com and comment on our show posts. So the first message comes from tribute number 231113, and they say, "Hey Rebels, I was recently watching this video discussing honor, and it mentioned Cato the Elder. As we all know, Suzanne Collins just loves to name people after Greek, and would you look at this, he's a philosopher. Cato's epiphany goes like this, quote, 'When I'm dead, I'd rather have people ask why I don't have a monument rather than why I do.' Sound familiar? Can't wait for the Catching Fire movie, tribute number 231113. So I thought this was really cool. Greek philosopher, Cato.
Mind blown.
Yeah, so there's a fun little
thing. I mean, it's... I feel like Suzanne must have taken some sort of philosophy course during college.
Yeah.
I don't know where she pulls all these names out of.
And the Shakespeare we found on the show previously, it all makes sense.
Exactly.
Now. So April, what is the next email?
This one is from Cato Wookie Jake. And he says, "Dear Rebels, my friend has come up with a conspiracy about the first movie right at Thresh's death. He said that the Mutts killed Thresh because just a little after you hear Thresh's scream, you find Cato running out of the woods. So, he said, Cato didn't kill Thresh. The Mutts did because right after Thresh's scream, Cato runs out of the woods out of breath. And if you listen really carefully, you can hear Cato's scream too. I'd like to know what you think about this. Thank you and keep fighting. Cato Wookiee Jake."
Alright guys, what do you think? I've heard this theory before, but the theory is that the Mutts killed Thresh, not Cato. April, are you a skeptic of this theory?
No, I feel like the Mutts probably killed Thresh. Like, I don't think Cato probably... I don't know, it just makes more sense that Thresh got killed by the Mutts than got killed by Cato. Cato decided to run.
Alex, what do you think?
I mean... Yeah, I guess he was killed by the Mutts. I mean, from the evidence in this email, it looks like it was made more or less clear in the film. I think in the book, it's obviously more, you know, up to the reader in the book. But I think in the movie, they make it pretty clear.
I agree. Third email.
We all agree.
Yay!
Yay!
So the third and final email comes from Jada, and Alex, could you read that off, please?
Sure.
Oh, this is fun. So, this is like a chicken soup for the Hunger Games soul.
So Jada says, "Hey guys, I'm writing to you from the city of Moore, Oklahoma. Your podcasts have been keeping me smiling and positive throughout the whole tornado ordeal, and I just want to say thank you. Thank you for your insightful opinions on the series that helped me understand it more, if not in a different light. Thank you, Elaine and April, for not letting testosterone entirely run the show. Thank you, Alex, for sharing that beautiful singing voice of yours with all of us. Thank you, Hurley, for being one of the best hosts on iTunes and online. Thank you for the chapter chats, the news reports, whether they be plentiful or not, Harak, the reviews, the In the Arena debates, and the bloopers. People say that they read books or listen to music to escape from the real world. Well, I want to thank you for being my own personal form of escapism from this tragedy that is my real world now. Thank you for being my guiding light on the long road to recovery. My sunshine on a stormy day, literally. My smile in the land of frowns. Thank you for being my number one source on all things Hunger Games. Ignite the spark, join the rebellion. Thank you."
Wow.
Jada, you're so cute. Oh my god.
Thank you, Jada, for listening. We truly appreciate this and emails like this, and we're happy to provide this show to everybody.
We hope you're doing well, Jada.
Yeah, this email was
everything's recovering.
Yeah, definitely. I hope this email was sent a while back and we just never got a chance to read it off. So, definitely email us with the update. We just want to know how you're doing. But those emails are always amazing to get. And it's why we do what we do. Right, guys?
Yeah,
why we do it for
definitely.
You guys.
Yes.
Definitely. It's the best thing ever to get emails like that.
All right, so that does it for the mailbag this week. Thanks for everyone for emailing in. And now we are moving into a segment that has been long awaited by fans and listeners alike. and that is Chapter Chat, which has returned. And the Chapter Chat is our main segment in which we discuss two chapters from the Hunger Games trilogy. Previously on Catching Fire, we just learned through Virus's crazed mumblings that the arena is in fact a clock. In this week's installment, we will be analyzing chapters 23 and 24 of Catching Fire. And as always, spoiler alert for the entire trilogy. So, chapter 23, let's just jump straight in. Katniss realizes the arena is set up exactly like a clock, with sections from 1 to 12. Each section is lethal for 1 hour at a time. So, did you guys realize that the arena was a clock beforehand, or was this a complete surprise to you?
You know, in retrospect, it's pretty clear, but oh man, that was such a huge surprise when I read it.
Yeah.
That's when I started to really, you know, get into Catching Fire. Before that point, you know, it was very political, very much, you know, sort of, not going to say romance, but very into the relationship. But this caught me.
Yeah.
I'm really up for, you know, cool arenas. That's why, you know, me as a boy read this. And this is such a great idea.
Yeah. And it's definitely, like, it's always, like twists are one thing in plots, but realizations, those are what get me too.
Right.
Yeah. So Katniss shares her epiphany with the others and decides that they can't stay in one place in case other terrorists come to find them. She remembers how Plutarch showed her his own watch long ago with the Mockingjay on it, and she wonders if he was trying to tell her something. She wonders, like, it was pretty obvious. Now that if you read that scene, it's like, it's kind of like he's trying so hard for her to realize it. But,
oh yeah.
So they start to move. Oh yeah, go ahead.
No.
Oh, okay. So they start to move, but Beatty refuses to move without his wire. Turns out the strange metal thing Katniss set aside before is a wire, and it is BT's weapon, which will come into play later on in the climax. So Johanna says Beatty risks everything to get it at the cornucopia. So they get moving again, and Phoenix says that they should head back to where they all entered the arena. Katniss worries about her allies. It's great to have them right now, but at some point they're all going to have to kill each other, and that's really going to suck. So they make it to the beach.
Really?
Well, it's death, so, you know, it does suck. Can you imagine, if they all did exactly what they were going to do in the first one, they all got the Nightlock berries and do, like, a giant group suicide pact?
I was expecting that to happen.
Alternate ending.
Yeah, really. What if all the tributes in there, you know, they go try to go to Cornucopia, and Katniss is like, wait, guys, just aim everything at the person next to you,
yeah.
Call Mexican standoff, and we all get out alive.
That would make the headlines. That should be the alternate ending.
That would have been the best.
Alternate ending, yes. And it would have just ended there, and, you know, Preston Snow's like, oh, no, not again, not again.
We should do that. We should petition Francis Lawrence to change the ending.
We are going... Actually, I'm going to contact the guys from How It Should Have Ended.
Oh.
And I'm going to see if we can get that done.
Yeah. That'd be good. So, anyway. Where were we? So, they make it to the beach, and Virus goes into the water to wash the metal thing that Beatty's so attached to. And she's singing, which everyone thinks is kind of weird. Beatty explains that Virus can tell when things are going to go south. It's a special talent of hers. He compares her to the warning birds that miners use, which is a kind of allusion to Katniss's own father. So this makes Katniss sad, and she's distracted by thoughts of her family and District 12. So the others regroup, Johanna finds her weapon of choice, an axe, naturally, and Peeta starts trying to make a map of the clock so they can figure out where the danger zones will be and when. Suddenly, everyone gathers around to look at Peeta's creation. Then something terrible happens. Virus has stopped singing. And this is kind of like in those horror movies where it's like, wait. Or it's like in Harry Potter where it's like, wait, the harp isn't playing anymore when they're in the first movie. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
So they react as quickly as they can, but it's too late. A rival group of tributes has killed her. Johanna and Katniss kill two of the attackers, Gloss and Kashmir, while Finnick takes defense and covers them. So two of the other attackers, Brutus and Anobaria, escape. And I'm really excited to see these kind of, like, quote-unquote evil victors, because there are kind of two sides to the, you know, it's not exactly a free-for-all in this film, or movie, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
So then another trick of the arena happens, something that feels like an earthquake or an amusement park ride. Everyone's thrown off their feet and scattered. When the earthquake is over, the attackers are gone, Beatty is missing, and Wyrus is dead, washed out to sea. So they spot Beatty in the ocean, and Finnick gets him. Katniss realizes that they need Beatty's special metal object, which Wyrus had, so she has to go into the water and pry it from Wyrus's dead hands. Which I feel like happens a lot in this series, her prying something from dead people's hands.
Oh, poor Katniss.
Poor Katniss, seriously. In the first movie, she had to get it from a stung girl.
Glimmer.
Yeah, Glimmer. She had to get the, what's it called? Arrows. Bow from her.
What are those things called? Her main instrument?
Arrow and bow, yeah. So they are all sad and stunned, and their little group is shrinking. They have to keep moving, though, so they decide to go back to the starting point of the clock. The problem is, they don't know where that is exactly. The team is at a disadvantage because everything they do and say is recorded, so the game makers can adjust the game and make it harder as the tributes make discoveries about it. They don't know what to do, so they just go back into the forested area. Finnick and Katniss go get water, while Johanna and Peeta work on making another drawing of the clock and stay with Beatty, who's still weak. Katniss is confused because everyone around her seems to be trying to help Peeta. This is a weird thing to see in the arena, where each person is supposed to be out for him or her herself. She feels like there's something she doesn't understand, but what? So that kind of starts to come into play here, that plot point. Katniss and Finnick are getting water from a tree when something terrible happens. They hear a tortured screaming from close by. It's Katniss's sister, Primrose.
Dun dun dun.
When I
love how all these chapters end on like huge cliffhangers.
Yeah, all of them. Like seriously.
Every single one.
Which it's great though. And when I first read this, I thought they literally took Prim and brought her to the arena. That's how weird I was thinking. What were you guys' reactions to that?
Yeah, it was a while ago, so it's hard to remember. But I recall just being like, Prim?
Prim?
I was just really confused. Like, I was, obviously, you know, big Hunger Games fan. I didn't really think about him. It's like, oh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Keep on flipping through the pages. But I remember being like, where is this going?
Yeah.
Because as we're going to discuss in, you know, chapter 24, this is very different from other things that have happened in the arena. This is really psychological warfare.
And it makes you wonder if last year's arena was just lame. Like, there was none of this. Like, in comparison...
You know, let's see. It was in a forest.
It was in a forest.
Which is essentially my backyard. So it's... You know, it makes it very easy to film a movie, I can tell you that.
Yeah,
I mean... But in the grand perspective of things, you hear about, you know, there's these winter landscapes, and there's, like, post-apocalyptic, like, bricks and rubble, and then you get woods.
Yeah.
Which is cool, but not that cool.
No, it's kind of like, it's either the quarter quell is amazing, or that was just a boring year, so...
I mean... I don't know, maybe they ran out of funding? Maybe, these things must cost a lot of money.
That's the political commentary right there. They couldn't get the taxes.
Exactly. Right. Do they have taxes in Panama?
We're finally...
These are the questions that keep me up at night.
We're finally talking about what we want to talk about on the show, which is stagflation, guys. Come on.
Exactly. And do you think there's universal health care in Panama?
Hey, that's
well, the answer is obviously
hell no.
Let's address that.
What are we talking about? Move on.
Chapter 24. Alex, take it away.
All right. My God, what have we come to? Katniss takes off into the forest with no plan. All she wants to do is find her sister. But Prim isn't there. Katniss can hear her, but she can't see her. She becomes more and more frantic. Finally, she sees a bird, a Jabberjay, and realizes what's happening. The Jabberjay is an ancestor of the Mockingjay. It mimics the sound of human voices. It's not real. It's just a part of the game. Still, Katniss kills the bird. So Finnick finds her. She starts to explain what's happening when another Jabberjay speaks up. This one's a voice that Finnick knows, and he takes off in search of it. Katniss has to go after him. He won't stop panicking until she kills the bird and explains what happened. But then it gets worse. Finnick points out that since the birds are imitators, the people they love probably were in really bad pain. Thank you, Finnick, for psyching everybody out. Other Jabberjays start, and Katniss can hear Gale's voice. Finnick realizes they have to move out of the Jabberjay's vicinity, and he forces Katniss back to their campsite. But when they get there, they realize they see their allies but not hear or touch them. They are stuck behind a see-through wall. They're trapped with the horrible birds until the hour is over. PETA, Johanna, and Beatty can't help them. The birds come after them. Katniss kills as many as she can, but they keep coming. For an hour, Katniss and Finnick have to try to hold on while they hear the voices of everyone they know in tremendous pain and suffering. When the hour is over, the wall is gone and the other allies rescue them. PETA tries to calm Katniss and Finnick down by explaining that Jabberjays are fake, and that the game makers use technology to create the sound of agony. None of it was real. He reminds Katniss that their families can't be dead on the outside. That wouldn't play well to the crowds watching the games.
Yeah, that's the thing, because, you know, if you're, like, take this for example, it's a bit extreme, but Hitler, everyone, his subjects, they loved him. He was very charismatic, and that was why he was so, you know, he was able to do what he did for a long time, you know, terrible things. But if people found out that Snow was actually torturing them, he wouldn't have the people on his side. You know what I mean?
Right, it's all about public image. That's a very big theme of just the whole Hunger Games trilogy in general, how everybody perceives you.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And how you perceive yourself. And so I think Preston Snow is playing on just as much of a game as, you know, Katniss is. He has to keep up his image. You know, he kind of sees his whole country falling apart, but he has to maintain his composure and just be seen as the leader and just not do anything to screw himself over.
Right. Yeah.
Slowly, Katniss and Finnick come to believe the idea, especially after Tech Whiz BT confirms that it's not hard to generate fake voices. Johanna gets them all water, saying she's not afraid of the Jabberjays because there's no way she cares about. The Jabberjays won't have a voice to use on her. So I think this is a very interesting character moment in all of this chaos, because you don't really get too much about Johanna in the series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't learn too much about her. This is one of the first, you know, times you really see character development, where you see who she is as a person.
Right. And she is really, like, kind of the wild card of the group. And she's very right. volatile. So it's interesting to see her. I guess she's trying to pretend like she doesn't care, but it's kind of showing her, like, her insecurity with, like, she has nobody. So.
Right. So Pete and Katniss have a moment alone. Pete explains that Finnick was probably hearing the voice of Annie Cresta, another tribute who should have come to his games, but Mags volunteered to take her place. Turns out that Annie went crazy during her games, but Finnick still loves her. From far away, they see that someone else has died in part of the clock they haven't visited yet. They regroup and figure out where they are on the clock. And then it's nighttime again, their second night in the arena. Another 8 tributes have died. That means that only 3 other tributes remain outside their little group. Their opponents, Brutus, Enobaria?
Enobaria, yeah.
Enobaria and Chaff.
The weirdest name, Chaff.
Chaff. They receive a present from the outside world. Bread has been sent from District 3. They get 24 rolls of bread and divide them as evenly as they can between themselves. When it's safe, they return to the stretch of beach where they spent last night. They're hoping they'll be able to relax and stay put for a few hours, when the clock will reset again. While the others sleep, PETA and Katniss talk. They have a heart-to-heart and find out that Haymitch promised each of them, separately, that he'd help make sure the other one survived. And so this is very interesting, and, you know, Katniss is always being played by other people. She never really gets anything straight, and even her mentor, Haymitch, is using her in PETA. I think it's very interesting how he sort of pits them off against each other.
Yeah, it's also interesting because in the first one, PETA was sort of the one being played.
Right.
And, you know, played by Katniss, blah, 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 part of the whole, you know, they're in love sort of thing. And in this one, it's kind of a little bit switched. I think they're both being played, but it kind of makes them seem like pawns. It kind of expands the scope of the series, like, great, like, more than anything we've seen, you know?
Right. Because
they're part of the rebellion. Like, this is all part of a greater plan. And
they're just becoming cogs in the clock.
Ooh, a wordplay. I like it.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah.
They try to convince the other that he or she should be the one to survive. PETA plays his trump card, showing Katniss pictures of her family and telling her she should stay alive for them, and even marry Gale.
PETA, what are you doing? You have the girl.
Oh, the poor, hopeless romantic.
I know.
So they try to forget about the cameras and just be honest. PETA says he doesn't have people who rely on him like she does. Katniss says she relies on him. And then they share an incredible kiss.
Oh my goodness. Ooh la la.
Oh, the fan fiction writes itself. So there's lightning far away, which means the clock has started again. Finnick wakes up and takes over the watch. PETA stays with him and pushes Katniss to go to sleep. He He references their fake baby, and they're back to playing to the cameras. And then Katniss goes to sleep, because she deserves it.
Very nice. And that concludes chapter 24. Very nice. Very two important chapters. So if you have any thoughts on what we just covered, or if you have thoughts on chapters 25 and 26 of Catching Fire, which we will be discussing next episode, go ahead and email us in. And finally, to end off the show this week, we have Harrock. In Harrock, or Hunger Games Rock, we close out the show each week with the musical selection of one of the host's choice that we think fits well with the Hunger Games. This week, it is April's pick, and she chose Death Valley by Fall Out Boy. April, go ahead and explain why this fits with the Hunger Games.
Well, there's this one line that really goes well, and it's like, I want the guts and glory, this town is wasted and alone, and that pretty much is just like tributes and all their districts and such like that.
Yeah.
And the rest of the lyrics go too, but that's a very prominent lyric in the song that goes with it.
And Death Valley just like says arena to me.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, yes.
All right, everybody. Thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit Rebellion Radio Podcast for literally all your show needs. Comment and discuss with other listeners on our show posts. Find out how to subscribe to us on iTunes, which is hugely important. And get those links to our Tumblr, Facebook, and Twitter. We love the Facebook and the Twitter activity, so guys, don't miss out. And those are at /RRPodcasts. Follow us, like us. It's a great time. We post pictures, videos, and things of the sort. And of course, contact us for anything at all at comments@RebellionRadioPodcast.com. We love everything. If you want dating advice, if you need advice on your schoolwork, if you want Alex to do your homework for you, whatever you want, email us in.
If you want music recommendations.
Oh, yeah. And film recommendations, too. Yeah.
If you just want to talk to us, just, like, do this. Like, doesn't even matter. Just talk to us.
We're a hotline. And we want, exactly. We're lonely. Your emails. And we need them for the show, of course. So Hunger Games-related stuff, I guess. We'll take a look at that, too.
Fine.
So thank you all very much for listening. I'm Hurley Commons.
I'm Alex Bolova.
And I'm Evil Grisanti.
Fight the capital and the hunger. Join the rebellion.
You still there, listener? Good, because earlier this month, a little movie came out called Percy Jackson, Sea of Monsters. Now, if you're a new listener, then you don't know that we used to have a Percy Jackson podcast. And we reviewed the first movie, and then we stopped. However, the second movie has come out. We have not seen it yet, although we all intend to. Hopefully when it's not expensive, because I don't want to pay money to see something that has a 38% on Rotten Tomatoes. But we are here to review the reviews of Percy Jackson, Sea of Monsters. Alright, so first, let's alternate. Let's start off with a positive one. So Hurley, choose one.
Alright, Percy Jackson and the Sea of Monsters, positive review time. Tweens and young teens should be sufficiently distracted by the movie's brisk pace and heroic mayhem, even if they're not too unnerved by its, at times, nightmarish imagery. Interesting.
You know, for kids.
Right.
Alright, April, please choose a positive one.
A positive one?
Get all five of them out of the way.
Okay, this one says, interesting, a film based on Greek mythology is done by a guy named Thor.
Is that true?
The director's name is, I kid you not, Thor Frudenthal,
his name is
who Thor is best known for his work as the director of such wonderful films as Diary of a Wimpy Kid and Hotel for Dogs.
Oh, dear God.
Now, fun fact, his best film, according to Rotten Tomatoes, is Diary of a Wimpy Kid, which has a 53%, and Percy Jackson is the worst at 38%, and Hotel for Dogs is 46%.
I loved...
Jesus Christ.
I love Diary of a Wimpy Kid, though. Say what you want about it. It's amazing.
All right. The more you learn about Hurley.
I know.
Okay, and then one last positive one to get out of the way. A smart derivative load of bullfinch. Its director, Thor Frudenthal, has a name perfectly suited to link the mythical and the psychoanalytical. I have no idea who this reviewer is. His name is Philip French. But good use of words. But we're not here to celebrate this film, because nobody celebrated this film. So Hurley, please choose a negative review.
Here's a good one. Here's a good one. Quote, one for the kids if they're really misbehaving.
Ouch.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
All right, from Connie Ogle from the Miami Herald, a top critic, in Percy Jackson, Sea of Monsters, choosing the dumbest character is a colossal task. Burn. All right, April, choose one.
I'll do the one from Christian Harloff. And it says...
Wait. Oh my God. I know him. What? I watch his YouTube channel.
Oh my God. This one says, didn't we get past this type of CGI in the mid-90s?
Oh. All right. Another one from Rob Vox from Mania.com. None of it's particularly unpleasant. It just smacks of zero effort. A cast and crew perpetuating the franchise solely because some number cruncher decided it was worth the investment. All right, Hurley, I think it's time for you to lead us out. Give us your favorite rotten review.
Favorite rotten? All right, last review. Elaborate backstories have more meaning when the characters are known and loved. Percy Jackson's endless exposition only demonstrate why he's nobody's favorite boy wizard.
Oh.
That's hard. Especially to Percy Jackson fans.
I know.
So thank you for joining us for our review of the reviews of Percy Jackson Sea of Monsters, which, judging by the 38%, are more entertaining than the actual movie.
We'll see you next time.
See you next
folks.
Time.
Bye.
Where we review. I have no idea.
And the final news story is a capital. Oh, God. That was butchered. And
can't speak today.
Take two and action.